Hello everyone, welcome to Computer Science E7. This is lecture 7, Even More Software Tools, or rather Software Tools Continued. We have a number of these throughout the semester, and sometimes I confuse myself with how I named all of them. But anyway, we have just released now assignment 3. This is assignment 3 of 4. If you haven't picked one up, do let us know and we can give it to you. Basically, it's very similar in spirit to problems, or rather assignment 2, where there is three parts. The first part is a problem set-like part, which is more theoretical, question-based part. Part two is a part where you're really just supposed to go out and take photos. And there's 10 photos, again, that you must take. But this, you should pay attention to the technical requirements here because they've changed ever so slightly. If you have a camera that is capable of taking photos in the RAW format, you are allowed to begin doing so and submitting photos in the RAW format. And this is different from before, where we required only JPEG photos for submission. But the reason that we are allowing you now to submit RAW photos is that beginning with today's lecture, we're going to start working with software tools where we can open and modify RAW files and edit them just like we would JPEG, but with a lot more control. And although you won't actually be doing any modifications of images with the RAW files that you submit or with the JPEG files that you submit, again, they must be completely original and unedited, this is just a starting ground for us to get sort of a baseline in terms of a lot of different techniques that there are for Photoshop in particular and RAW organizers and RAW processors in general. And so just because you are allowed to submit RAW files doesn't mean that you have to. So you are allowed to submit either JPEG or RAW format. The idea is that you begin take photos in the RAW format so that you have some RAW files that you can modify at a later date. And certainly you'll probably want to begin working with them with all of these software tools that we have available to us. And there's another request that I have for this particular part of the assignment. Because next week is spring break, woohoo, everybody should hopefully be going out on a big Cancun trip or whatever these kids do these days, right? Well, certainly I doubt any of you are going. And if you are, let me hitch a ride because that sounds like a lot more fun than what I'll be doing. But at the very least, try to do something outside of what you normally do, what you normally take photos of. Perhaps you can take the tea if you don't have a car and just go somewhere slightly unusual or somewhere where you haven't really gone before to take photos and just explore the area, take photos there and see what that's like. And the idea behind this, if you haven't done this already, is that just being in a new place, a place you haven't really been to before, that you're not really familiar with, will help you get the creative juices flowing, and perhaps you'll be able to produce some very interesting photographs, maybe ones that you hadn't considered before. So, of course, there's no way that we'll be able to know, have you actually never been here before, but it's just something that you might want to try for this run. And part three, just like for the previous assignment, basically you take one photograph that you are working on, perhaps it's one that you're working on in your apartment or in a homegrown studio sort of idea, and you post it onto the forum and get feedback from other students and the staff and try to retake the photo based on some recommendations there. So last week we talked a bit about the histogram, and we spent the entire lecture talking about it and really dividing it up and talking about the different types of histograms that there are. And this is actually very, very important to us, not just to know when we are looking at a histogram on the back of our digital camera, but also when we are going to work with the software tools that we are going to start looking at tonight, because all of these software tools have histograms available to you to look at and to understand. And it's useful to know what you are looking at and how your modifications are impacting your photograph, not only visually, but also numerically in terms of the histogram. Are there any questions on histograms before we move on? Okay, so Today really is all about Photoshop, and we'll begin by talking a little bit about some raw processing and how you can process some raw photographs. But before we even get into that, I wanted to talk about something that we didn't get a chance to talk about the last software lecture, and that is the idea of the ethics behind editing photos. There's a lot of questions out there about, what are you allowed to modify? Is this okay if you modify it in this way? And everybody seems to have a different idea of what is okay in terms of modifying an image and what is not okay. But throughout history, there's been this inclination for people to modify photographs, even before Photoshop existed and made it really mainstream in terms of the knowledge of the editing process that can happen. And so many, many years ago, a century and a half ago, when photography was just in its infancy, they were already modifying photos. So for example, this is a fairly recognizable portrait of President Abraham Lincoln, but it is actually, the photo was not actually taken in this way. It is actually a composite of Lincoln over, I believe that's John Calhoun, and they actually modified the image to place Lincoln in front, or on top of him, rather. And certainly, as you can begin to imagine, of course they didn't have computers back then, but they had darkroom, and they had a variety of tools available to them, where the masters, they became artistic masters at editing these photographs in the darkroom. And there's so many examples of that throughout history. So I'll post the link to this, but I just want to show a couple of these. Okay, so this is a reference, this one here in the middle. It says, Stalin routinely airbrushed his enemies out of photographs. So if we take a look at the photograph, we can see the original on the right side and the edited version on the left. And if you take a really close look, perhaps an initial pass at the photograph on the left, you wouldn't really be able to tell that it was modified in any way. But upon closer inspection, you'll notice that it looks a little bit strange. This rail right here, this railing, for example, it's very, very straight, but then it becomes sort of wavy right where the person was edited out, and then it becomes very, very straight again. And these are all, this is one example of a telltale sign where people will, especially on internet forums, will look at it, at a photograph, and just instantly say that it's been photoshopped or that the photo is fake. And many times you'll see really amazing or interesting photographs, and people automatically dismiss it as a fake. And that's because of now this prevalence of editing these photos in popular culture. And even, as you can see from a long time ago, here's a good one. So this is of Benito Mussolini, but he actually edited out the horse handler so that it looked like he was... it was a much more powerful image than it really is, perhaps. There's many of these examples. We can scroll through all of this. Let's see. So here's an interesting inadvertent edit, perhaps. This is a National Geographic magazine where it was the pyramids were modified slightly. They were squeezed together so that they could fit within the magazine cover. And we can keep going. I mean, there's so many examples of this. Let's see. Of course, they start talking about airbrushing and all of these sorts of things. Let's see. Do we have any recent examples? This photo of former Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice is modified heavily to really demonize her by making her eyes look a lot whiter and enhancing the contrast of various aspects of the image. So obviously, some people modify these photos with a very specific intent, but this is my opinion here. When people tend to modify images that are used for journalistic purposes, so for example, newspapers or news of any kind, really, it doesn't really seem right to modify the photo. You could even argue that cropping the photo, you are modifying it in some way, but there's obviously a lot of gray area here. Do you want the photo in the end to portray what the photographer believes the scene originally looked like? In which case, should they be able to modify the color, to increase the color so that a sunset looks more dramatic, for example? Or should they be able to remove something that's distracting in the photo so that you can see what it should have looked like had some object not actually been in there? And these are all questions that we must ask ourselves. And certainly, if we're not doing anything very journalistic related, then I think that we're pretty much okay. We can have the artistic license to do whatever we want to do to our particular images. Let's see, are there any other good ones? So here's an interesting example. This photograph of a firefighter here, I believe there was a staff photographer that was fired because he actually modified the color. He enhanced the color of this image before it was printed in the newspaper, and they said that that was not allowed in terms of their photo editing policy. And there's many, many gray areas here, and we could talk endlessly about what is right and what is wrong, but there just seems to be so much area here where we just have to draw an arbitrary line somewhere between what is right and what is wrong. But for the purposes of this class, pretty much everything that you do will certainly be fine, as what you are submitting is not really supposed to be journalistic in nature. This is another interesting example. This Time magazine from March 2007, they used a photograph of Ronald Reagan, and they actually photoshopped in, or they edited the photo to add a tear streaming down his face. And they did actually, in the credits of the photograph, mention that it was edited out beyond the photograph, the actual photograph that was taken. But some people said that this was sort of tricky because you had to read the fine print in order to determine that it was not a real photograph. There was actually an interesting recent example. I just thought of this, so let's see if I can find it quickly. There was actually regarding some missiles that were found, I believe, in Iran, and they were edited to show that there were more missiles than there actually were. Let's see here. Okay. So this was actually, this ended up being shown on the New York Times because it was such a big deal. And basically what had happened was that there was a photograph of Iran launching some missiles. Whether or not they were nuclear, it doesn't matter. I think they were just testing them. And someone took a photograph of it. But someone realized that a lot of the photo was actually doctored, so that there were additional missiles shown. And they highlight here some of the areas that were duplicated. So, for example, these original portions are these orange circled areas. So this area, this missile here and this cloud area here, and then they were duplicated into this red portion. And so you can see that here these clouds are very, very similar, and these two missile launches are almost exactly the same. And I believe they might even have the original photo right here, where you can see that the other missile actually had not launched or had already been launched, so that it was misleading. And I believe a lot of people just took this photograph for what it was and just posted it. It made national news, if not international news, when it was posted all over the internet, and a lot of newspapers picked it up, even though it was a doctored image and certainly not real. So, okay, there's only so much of that we can talk about before I start boring myself. So I figure this is a good time to start talking about Photoshop and editing photos in general. So I have actually brought onto this laptop a few photos that we have dealt with, and in fact I took them in the raw format, so hopefully we will be able to look at editing them in their original format. So hopefully all of you recognize this as being the pinhole photograph that I took in the first lecture, and as you can see, it's not super good. I mean, if we ignore the fact that it's fuzzy and that it's blurry, we can see that it seems to be slightly overexposed. The contrast is not that high. There's a variety of the main reason for this being that this photo was taken with the pinhole camera, so that the contrast became very, very low. So there's a lot of settings here, and a lot of them are pretty obvious about what you can do. Generally, when you are working with raw photos, you have greater latitude of what you can modify than if you're working with JPEG photos. So there's a lot more data in a raw photo that you may or may not be able to see when comparing it next to the exact same photograph that's in a JPEG format. And we'll talk about why that's technically true in a later lecture. But even if you look at the file sizes between a JPEG file and the RAW file, you'll notice that the RAW file contains many, many more bytes of data. Usually, this, I believe, is about 10 megabytes or maybe 8 megabytes in size, whereas the JPEG file is probably closer to 1 or maybe even half a megabyte. So there's a lot more data in this RAW file, which means that even though we can't see it, we have a lot more latitude to modify a lot of the settings that we see on the right. And of course, a lot of what we'd modify here can be changed later and can actually be changed in JPEG formats as well, or for files that are in the JPEG format as well. But usually, if you're going to start working with a RAW file, this is the first pass in order to start processing it. So I mentioned a couple of things wrong with it. We can see here that we have a colors histogram, which shows us a composite of all of the different colors that exist. And as you can see, it's way, way overexposed. So I can bring down the exposure pretty easily. And you'll notice that as I decrease the exposure, the histogram moves to the left to indicate that we are now beginning to properly expose this photograph. And you may say, well, it looks a little bit dark. And it certainly does, even on the computer screen here. It's because we have to do a little bit more tweaking. And certainly, not everything should be darker. For example, this man's shirt here and this area back here looks like it should be a bit brighter than it is in this photograph. And so if we increase the contrast, now increasing the contrast is something that's interesting. When we talked about histograms, we talked about the dynamic range or the tonal range, basically the width of the histogram itself. If we increase the contrast, you're making the histogram wider. So let's see what happens. Watch the histogram as I increase the contrast here. It's already up, but as I increase it more and more and more, we see that the histogram begins to widen. Now, this is pretty useful because now the darker regions become darker, the lighter regions become lighter. That's what increasing the contrast means. And you can imagine that that's exactly what's happening to the histogram. Because we're making the darker regions darker, it's becoming the leftmost regions are pulling back to the left, and the lighter regions are being pushed over to the right. We're stretching this out. So this is looking okay, but it's still looking a little bit dark to me. Maybe I do want to increase the exposure just a little bit. Maybe there's this brightness tool, which seems to, if you take a look at it, it seems to modify more the dark regions of the image. And usually, all of these RAW processors have different settings. You'll find a lot of very typical ones, such as exposure, contrast, usually some form of saturation, which looks like it might be down here, saturation in this case, where you can make the colors pop more. So we can increase the saturation here and make the colors look even more colorful. Did you have a question?
I'm just wondering what's the difference between exposure and brightness? Because
Right. So what is the difference between exposure and brightness? So I don't know exactly the difference that Adobe uses to call the difference between exposure and brightness, but certainly what we are talking about with exposure is you can imagine modifying the exposure value, and that is as if you were modifying the exposure values in person. So right now we have about -1, you'll see it says about -1 value of exposure, which means that we've decreased the exposure by about one stop. So now it's as if we have one stop darker of an image. The brightness usually refers to the darker regions where it might actually modify the what's called the levels of the image, and it might make, so as you can see, it's making dark, it's modifying more, well, it seems to be modifying the darker regions more than the lighter regions, whereas modifying the exposure here modifies everything as a whole. So it seems to be that, though I am less familiar with Photoshop's RAW processor than I am with others. Some other ones may make more sense to you than this one does, and certainly you have to end up looking at all of these various types of RAW processors to figure out which one is the best. In fact, I'll bring up the other one that I am familiar with here. The one that I use most often is a product by Apple called Aperture, and that is both a RAW processor. It is both a RAW processor and a RAW file organizer, whereas Photoshop is mostly just a... it can process RAW files, but it's mostly used to edit photographs in general. So I have here the same photo, and if I go over to the adjustments, I can modify all of these adjustments. So you see that in this case, in the case of Aperture, what I've done is I've decreased the exposure by about negative point, so I know it's small. Let me see if I can make it bigger. Decreased the exposure by a little over 3/4 of a stop. The black point, we'll talk about that, what that is in just a little bit. Increased the contrast and the saturation in order to make the colors pop a little bit more. Certainly when you are modifying these photos, some of the easiest thing to do to increase the look or to make your photos look better, to make the perception that they look better, is to increase the contrast a little bit and to increase the saturation. However, remember that I said that when you increase the contrast, what you are doing is you are widening the histogram. So you have to watch the histogram and make sure that you're not overexposing or underexposing too many details in the photo. Otherwise, you can make a what was originally a good photo, in an attempt to make it look better, you could actually honestly make it worse. Okay, so I have modified this image several ways, and I will open it. And gotta wait a second for this to open. So I have it here, and you'll notice there's one change that I didn't make. Notice the difference between this photo that was modified in Photoshop and in Aperture, this photo. It's the exact same photo, but the colors are different. It seems to be cooler. The overall photo seems to be cooler in this Aperture version here. And that deals with the white balance of the photo, and that's something that I didn't modify in this case, but it's something that you will certainly want to modify when you are opening RAW files, because then you can make the colors a lot more neutral, and you will be able to make the photo, give the colors in the photo the appearance as if they were actually there. Many cameras will actually bias the colors in a photograph in one particular direction, whether it be maybe slightly warmer, slightly cooler, especially in difficult color situations such as heavy fluorescent lighting or nighttime lights, for example. Your white balance will frequently be off, and you will have to modify it. So in Aperture, it's very, very easy to do. You'll notice that there is a white balance. There's a little white balance tag here, and you can modify the temperature, what's called the color temperature itself. You can make it cooler by dragging it to the left and decreasing the Kelvin or making it warmer. We'll go into more detail, of course, in the colors lecture much later. But what seems to be easiest is if you pick the little eyedropper, and it gives you a little magnifying glass, and it tells you to choose a neutral gray, and that's basically all that I've done. I just put the little crosshairs over a section that looks like it should be about a middle gray or just a gray tone, and I click on it, and then it will modify the image to be, assuming that what you have selected should be a gray, it will modify the image, perhaps making the colors a bit cooler, making the colors a bit warmer, depending on what you want to do. So let's see, if I pick something crazy like yellow here, you'll see that you saw for a brief second that in trying to compensate for that, it made it very, very blue. That's because what it's trying to do is it's assuming that this yellow is now this gray tone, and it's trying to compensate for that. Obviously, though, it is not, so we want this to be a bit warmer. Okay, So now let's say that you have opened your photograph here in Photoshop. Let's see, I wanted to, let's see, so that's good. We'll just open it here in Photoshop. Now, there's a couple of things, a couple of basic tools that we should go over before we dive into some of the really interesting stuff. And the first one is levels. So we mentioned contrast, where one of the things that we can do is if we increase the contrast, we can basically stretch the histogram so that the darker areas become darker, the lighter areas become lighter, which is essentially what increasing the contrast is. Using the levels tool, though, we actually have quite a bit more power over adjusting the contrast of a particular image. So here we have, obviously, the histogram for this image. You see that we have a slider underneath the histogram with three little knobs, a black, this sort of middle gray, and a white. And now what will happen if we adjust one of these is that the portion of the histogram that we select one of these sliders to be will become that new portion. So right now this black region indicates the farthest leftmost area of the histogram. So if we slide this black slider over a little bit, that means that we are making some of these lighter tones. We're going to adjust this histogram so that these lighter tones become this deepest black. So we are essentially then will be increasing the contrast. So if I do that, you notice that some of the darker regions become darker. So if I keep going and keep going, you notice that now if I put it about halfway through, what I am telling Photoshop by moving it so far over is that I want what was originally this middle gray right here in the middle, I want it to now be a black region in the photograph. So that's what I am talking about when I'm pushing over this area. But obviously, I'm making way too much, far too dark in this image, so I'll actually move it over to about the farthest left area of where the histogram starts. Because then what I'm saying is that I want this portion where there seems to be a lot of dark area originating in the photograph, I want that to be black. And you can see that if I modify it, it adjusts the contrast and it makes the colors appear as though they are popping a bit more. Now if we take a look here on the right, I'll zoom in again, you can see that the farthest rightmost area of the histogram, there's no white pixels. But if we take a look at the photograph as a whole, you'll notice that, yeah, there could be some areas in the photograph that could be completely white. So I could bring over this white slider a little bit and make some areas of the image be completely white. So again, I'll push this over. And it's not as noticeable this time, so I'll just keep going to show you what happens. So if I keep going, keep going, keep going, what I'm telling Photoshop again is that now by having it all the way over here, I want this middle area to be completely white in this image. Okay, so I'll move it to be something more realistic, maybe around here. That looks pretty good. So right now we have this preview button checked, which means that we can see the results. I'll uncheck it so we can see the original photo. So this is what it looked like before. I can click preview and see the difference now. So before, there's an obvious change in contrast, whereas before it was sort of low in contrast or relatively low in contrast. This is before, now after, there is additional contrast for us. But there is a slight bit of a problem with this, and maybe not with this photo itself because we were working with the original raw file, but using this levels tool on a JPEG file can be kind of dangerous. Any ideas why that might be? Yes, good. So you're throwing away data, certainly, on the leftmost portion and the rightmost portion. But it looks like here in this case, there wasn't much data there to begin with. But what may help is if I hit enter on this. Okay, hit enter. And now let's take a look at the histogram. You'll notice that now the histogram looks much wider than it did before. So what happens if we make it too wide, for example? What might happen to the photo?
Throw away the two ends, right?
Right, we're throwing away the two ends, but we're also, because remember we're increasing the contrast, we're also stretching this histogram out. But
sorry,
this...
So the question was, what happens when you save as a JPEG?
The question is, what happens if you adjust the levels too much on a JPEG?
Oh, okay.
So, yes?
You lose detail because the way the JPEG compression works is that it takes adjacent pixels and makes some assumptions on that. And
right, very good. It's very good. So it's a bit more general than that, even. So right now we know that JPEG files are what are known as 8-bit files. And so if we look at the title of this photo, actually, we can see that we have the name of the photo, image 2310.cr2 at 25%, which is the zoom level, and that we're working in RGB, so a color mode, and then it says /8, which means an 8-bit file type. So in this case, I've already done the conversion from a RAW file to a JPEG, but because it's JPEG and because it's 8 bits, that means that we only have 256 discrete values for every color, right? And what can happen is that if you stretch these 256 values too much, that means that you will get, rather than these smooth gradations or these smooth changes in color, Whereas right now you can see that we have a relatively smooth change in color from one person to another, it becomes much harsher. You notice steps in the changes of color. And to show you what I mean, so here we can already see in the levels we are already introducing some steps, but if I increase the contrast a lot more, make it ridiculous in this case, you'll start to see what I am talking about. So it's not so much that it's not so much that the lighting is very, very harsh, though that is one aspect of it. The other thing is that the steps between each of these colors, so the step from black to white, you begin to notice these steps. And this happens particularly, it might be more difficult to notice here, but if I had an image, let's see if I can find one. I have a lot of photos here that I wanted to have just in case, but let's say I have this JPEG image. Where'd it go? Okay, here it is. So right here we have a blue sky, which is, you can see there's some gradation from this sort of whitish area over to a deeper blue sky. And what can happen if I adjust the levels too much on it is that you will begin to notice posterization. So you can see now, this is what I'm talking about up here. This step from the white to the darker areas is noticeable. It's not a smooth change. And this is an extreme example because I've really modified the contrast a lot, but this can happen if you try to adjust the contrast on just about any image. You may notice that rather than having a smooth gradient, you'll start to get steps in this gradient. And remember, another way that we could get these steps was by using a file type that had much fewer bits. Remember, maybe if we changed it and saved it as a GIF file format, for example. Remember that we had that the sunset photo that had a lot of rings from the sunset or from the sun itself over to the darker regions of the image. It was orange, and then it was slightly darker, rather than being a smooth change. So this is a dangerous thing to do when you have JPEG files. And in fact, I'm zooming in here on the histogram itself. You can see the original histogram in this sort of grayish area. Now you can see the new histogram. You don't have a lot of values in the middle here. You only have this, a lot of values here, a lot of values here, a lot of values here. You can see numerically this posterization that's happening, this step change in the colors. And that's bad. So adjusting the contrast a little bit is usually okay. You usually won't notice it, but adjusting it a lot is going to be dangerous. So you should be careful when using levels. Don't go crazy. Just use it sparingly and use it smartly. Okay, so this is talking about the input levels. You'll notice that we have a couple of other things here. I should probably talk about this middle one first. So this mid-tone area tells Photoshop where you want the mid-tone level to be. So let's say I move it over to the left, and this may seem at first slightly counterintuitive, but bear with me for a second. As I move it over to the left, it gets brighter. So why might this be? Well, what I am saying is that I want, so by first by moving over this white, this highlight area, let's see, let me zoom in a little bit so this becomes easier. So by moving over this highlight area knob a little bit, what I am doing is I am saying that I want to stretch my histogram, right? So I want to make this area the black and I want to make this area the white, and the histogram will stretch and the colors and the values within the photograph itself will stretch to represent that. But what this is saying is that this will be the middle gray. So if we were to look at this histogram after I hit OK, what is going to happen is that this area is going to stretch out to be the middle gray, and then the remaining part will be the highlights or the lighter portion of the image. So what's happening by pushing it down, you're saying that these darker tones, darker, 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 darker tones, are going to be this middle gray, which lightens up that portion of the image. And it is this that might actually be that idea of brightness, where it could actually be adjusting this mid-tone range rather than adjusting the exposure as a whole. So of course, you could go way too far with this as well, and you can get some really crazy posterization or some really crazy aspects of color in your image, so you really don't want to overdo it. But modifying it slightly to perhaps give slightly more contrast to the lighter regions or maybe the darker regions of the image is certainly a useful thing to be able to do. Okay, so you'll notice one more thing down here. So if I go back to the original, you'll notice the values at the very bottom. It says 0, it says 255 at the far right, it says 0 for the black, and it says 1.0 for the middle. I don't actually know why they say 1.0, but presumably it's to reduce confusion. It might be confusing if it said 128, but you can think of this mid-tone level as being a 128 value, and all of the values in between exist between here. So basically you can adjust the knobs using just by sliding it over, or you can enter in the numerical value yourself, or you even have another option. You can use one of these eyedroppers. So this black eyedropper, for example, I can click on that and select a portion of the image that I think should be truly black, and then it will be adjusted accordingly. But where this might be more helpful is the lighter one, where I can say, okay, I want this farthest rightmost portion to be white, and then it will stretch the histogram. So it doesn't actually, it automatically stretches the histogram for me to adjust for that. And so now this portion of the image has become bright white. Okay, so you'll notice that there is actually a middle gray here, and this, confusingly enough, does not do the same thing as this middle gray tone here. And I would suggest using the eyedroppers for the black and the white portion, but use the slider and the numerical values for the middle gray. Yes?
This type of histogram, the sawtooth pattern,
yes,
is what I see when I manipulate stuff. Why? What is that? What's going on to create that sawtooth
pattern? What's going on to create the sawtooth pattern? That's a very good question. This is the result of what happens when you stretch the histogram too much. Because we only have 255 different values, let's say we double all of the values, which would make, let me go back to an original histogram. So let's say I were to double all of the values, which would be the same thing as taking this white slider and dragging it down to about 128, right? Which means that we are now this 120, what's it, approximate now. Now this 128 will become the new 255. And if we were to do that, it has to redistribute the histogram, and the computer has to guess what's going to be in between. But technically, there's no data in there. So, for example, so there's 0 and then 1 very close to it. So 1 becomes 2, but there's now no new value for 1. So there's a hole. The gap is the missing thing. And this is a numerical version of the posterization. So we can't really see it perhaps very well right now, but we can see that this posterization does exist. We have thrown away data, and to compensate, the computer is basically is not going to make up data. It's just going to give us these gaps. Yes?
So is that how you can tell if it looks like that, but is that typical of an altered image?
So yes and no. If it depends on how the file was saved. So a smart person could presumably fill in the gaps, maybe with some false data, perhaps, or maybe try to smooth it by maybe using a blur on the image as a whole. And there's probably better techniques than that as well. But if you open up an image and you see this, then that is definitely a telltale sign that the contrast, at least, has been modified on the image. And so you would know then that some portion, at least, has been modified by a software. Yes?
Would it help to switch to 16 bits, maybe before manual?
Right, very good. So would it help then to change to 16 bits? So if we have, right now we were talking about how we have an 8-bit file format where we have 256 discrete values. What happens if we change to 16-bit? And let's see, I don't know if I can show this. There is a menu over, I'm going to have to show this a little bit later. But there is basically a menu where you can change the image from 8 bits to 16 bits. So that's a very good point. And yes, you can if the original image was 16 bits. But this file right here is a JPEG file. If we take a look at the top up here, it's a JPEG file, so it's only 8 bits. So even if we change it to 16 bits, the computer is not going to be able to get data out of nothing. It still only has 8 bits worth of data. So it won't be able to, you might still get that strange sawtooth pattern in the histogram if you were to modify it that way in 16 bits. However, many raw files are more bits than 8, like they might be 10, 12, 14 bits. And that is one reason why changing the contrast and a lot of these other things on the raw file itself, rather than after you've converted it to a JPEG, is very beneficial, because there's a lot more data there and there's a lot less chance for this histogram to become sawtoothed, so to speak. Any more questions? Okay, so back to levels. So you can see that this is becoming quite a useful thing to be able to modify. So you'll notice additionally, there's one more thing that we need to talk about, and that is that we have the input levels here, and there's something else called output levels. So whereas the input levels, by adjusting it, we are now making it higher contrast, we can adjust the output levels to decrease the contrast. And so that may be useful in its own right as well. So the output levels would basically, rather than stretching the histogram, it would squish it. It's basically the opposite of that. I lied. There is one more thing about the levels thing, and that is that you can modify more than just the RGB levels. You can modify each individual color channel. So let's say that I have, I want to modify the red color channel. What I can do is just modify the values within that red, make it perhaps brighter or darker, and what you'll notice is that this actually, will change the tint of the photograph as you do it. So if you have taken photographs in JPEG format and you don't have one of these, and you don't have the ability then to modify the white balance of the image because it's already been set and it's already been set in a JPEG file, then what you can do is adjust the levels for a particular color channel to get a more neutral color. So let's see, I think I have an example I might try for that. So this is a file, this is a photo taken of my father and brother by firelight. And firelight is notorious for really making images very, very red and very orange. And actually, surprisingly enough, it looks a lot more neutral on the projector screen than it does on the computer. But just for the sake of argument, I'll show you what can happen if I modify the red channel. So maybe I notice that it's a little bit too red. So what I want to do is perhaps decrease the contrast of the red, decrease the amount of red that exists in it, so I could try decreasing the output levels a little bit. So now you see if I go too far, I'll make it green. I'll make the image appear green, but I can modify the image this way. So I'll decrease the red a little bit. Maybe I need a little bit more blue. You can, if you take a look at the histogram, you can see that there's very, very little bright blue in this area. So maybe I'll try to increase some of the blue that exists here in this image as well. And of course, if I go too far, then make them look like monsters, but you can find a happy medium. And for the most part, you can go by eye for this stuff. There's not really a lot of numerical or quantitative values that you can take a look at this and say, okay, this is the best way to do it numerically. But you can go by eye when modifying these images and adjust the color scheme this way. So this is a before, which is perhaps a little too harsh, and this is after, which is just ever so slightly more neutral in terms of color. Now, of course, preferably would be that you took this photo in the raw file, in the raw format, and you can modify the white balance before you save it as an 8-bit file. Because every time we adjust these levels, we are decreasing the amount of data that we have in the photo. And as you can see here, we are getting some posterization in some of this, within some of the histogram. Okay, any questions about levels? Yes?
Why, for the red, did you adjust the output level?
So the reason that I adjusted the output level for the red and not the input was that if I were to adjust the input level, I would increase the contrast of the red, making red more prevalent in the photo. So let's say that I were to modify it, you can see that it just becomes redder and redder and redder until it really literally looks like they're on fire. But by adjusting the output levels, you are decreasing the contrast. You're decreasing the amount of that in the photo, and so you can decrease the amount of red within the photo slightly before you move on to some of the other color channels. So this one is tougher because I know that there's a lot of red in this photo that I want to get rid of, but many times maybe there's a particular color that you want to have more of in a photo. And so maybe I can go back to this other one, for example. Maybe I want the sky to be even more blue. So in this case, I wouldn't modify the output levels. I would modify the input levels and get the blue to pop a bit more by increasing the contrast, by making this portion of the blue, the completely brightest portion of blue that it can be. What happens is that we get more blue throughout the image. So as that's a before, which now looks relatively dull compared to now this modified and enhanced version of levels, where I've just added more blue. If you have an overexposed image, can you adjust the levels? So let's see. So let me go back to this image. Let me see if I can. All right. So I'm going to reopen this image, but instead allow it to be overexposed when I process it. So 1 second. Takes a little while. So now I'll keep the exposure. Oh gosh, this is getting annoyingly slow. Okay, so I'll just increase it a little bit. So now this is obviously overexposed. I'll hit open image to allow it to process and to store it in memory as an 8-bit file. You can see it's 8 bits up here, so we're essentially working with a JPEG now. And if we adjust the levels, if we decrease the output levels, you'll probably notice that we get a somewhat disappointing result. All we are doing is just decreasing the contrast and not regaining lost data that was there. Because especially in JPEG files, if you have a lot of very overexposed pixels within the image, those pixels are truly, truly white, and you won't be able to regain the details that made up that image. But you can make that white portion slightly grayer, if that makes sense. So now it's still it might still look overexposed in the sense that you have a large area that does not have any detail. It just doesn't look completely white, if that makes sense. So let's see. I'm not sure I have a better example. Well, let's see. Maybe I can do this one again, but a little bit more extreme. I will completely overexpose it so that we can show that we have lost details in it. Let's see. Let's go up. All right, so now we can see we've lost details, for example, in the background here. We can no longer really discern where the window is, whereas before, so what I'm talking about is the difference between this where this window shade meets this brighter region here. So if I make it much brighter and then hit return to open the image, let it think, okay, levels. Now decrease the output. I'm not regaining that data. It still is overexposed, it's just gray. That makes sense. So you might have a little bit of luck with it, but I wouldn't count on too much. So this will only really be helpful if you still have detail in it for detail in that image to preserve. Okay, any questions? Before we, yes?
When you're opening the raw file in Photoshop, it gives you that first options to modify it?
Or yes.
So
all I'm doing on the off screen that you can't see is I'm just dragging a raw file onto the Photoshop icon, then it loads as this. And the same thing would happen if I did file open, found the raw file, and then opened it this way. So normally what Photoshop asks you to do is to process the image, to convert it from a raw format to a bitmap format, so a format that it can work with. And in this case, we can make various adjustments to the exposure, to the saturation, to the contrast, to some other things before we click open image. And when we hit open image, Photoshop converts that to what's called a bitmap image, which is basically just, it's not a raw file anymore. It's just a file where every pixel has, you know, certain definition of values, and then we modify that in Photoshop. Does that answer your question? I'm not sure. Okay. Yes.
Down there, you can change the bit information. You can open the image in Photoshop. Yes,
exactly. So you can, by clicking on the information at the very bottom, you can change the depth of the color. So rather than having it be 8 bits, you can have it be 16 bits, which when we do that, we can then have a lot more leeway in modifying things such as levels and contrast and curves after we have processed the file. But don't forget that when you save that file as a JPEG file, that JPEG will still be reverted back to the 8 bits. So yes, we certainly can. And if you were going to make a lot of modifications to an image in Photoshop, you might want to change the depth to 16 bits rather than 8 so that you have more leeway. You still have a lot of values available to you. And if I click open image to process it, now we'll see that what we have up here instead is a 16-bit image that we would have a lot more leeway when modifying levels. So if we just do something crazy with the levels and hit OK, so you'll notice that after Photoshop recalculates the histogram, we don't have this sawtooth sort of problem after we have increased the contrast a great deal. And that's because we have used 16 bits and have preserved it. However, most of the time you'll be working in 8 bits, especially when you're working with JPEG files and the like, where you will continue to have that problem. That is a very good point. Okay, so there's one more thing I want to show you, not from levels, but another neat tool that is related to it, and that is called curves. So in this case, what you were shown is basically just a curve with the histogram in the background. You have what's called input along the lower x-axis, you have output along the y-axis, and you can modify this curve to do various adjustments to the image. So let's say I increase the curve a little bit. You notice that it makes overall this photo brighter. If I decrease this curve, it makes the overall photo darker. But you can do some more interesting things than just that. Perhaps you want to increase the Perhaps you want to increase the contrast slightly. You can give it this sort of a curve where you've decreased the lower bound and increased the upper bound. You can increase the contrast of the photo slightly. If I uncheck preview, you notice that the difference is in increase in contrast. You can even do some crazy things like completely invert the image. So I'll make black the new white and white the new black. Now all I've done is inverted the image. And so what does all of this mean here? So what is happening is that along the bottom, are the various values that make up this image. So along the farthest left, this is black. And at the farthest right, this is white. And we have all of the tones in between. And then when I modify this curve, right now you see that it's a one-to-one relationship. This is the output. So this is what we would see after we have modified the image. So by changing this curve, so let's give it a slight bump upwards, what we are saying is that this tone that's right in the middle, what was a middle gray, if I go up and see here, is now it's actually brighter than a middle gray. And this happens along this curve-like fashion, which allows you to modify very gradually all of the tones within the file. So it looks like a natural change within it. So this is perhaps a different way of looking at levels. You could do a similar thing by modifying the levels slightly, but this perhaps gives you a different way of perceiving it and a different way of modifying a lot of these things. And certainly that isn't to say that curves and levels are exactly the same thing, that you could do the same thing with both. You can certainly do quite a bit of things that are interesting with curves, such as modifying unique aspects of contrast. So let's try doing something crazy like this that you just cannot do when you are working with levels. So you probably wouldn't want to do this maybe for an everyday photo, but this is just an example of something that you want, that you might try to do. And realize that when you have a curve that is below this diagonal line, then what you're saying is are that these values are going to be darker in the end, and that when it is above the line, then these values that were here are now going to be brighter than they were before. Okay, any questions on that? Yes?
What are the things up on the right, the, like the crayon and the
blue? Oh, like these two buttons here?
Yeah.
The difference is that with the pencil, you can actually, I think, actually draw what you want the curve to be. So that was a horrible example. But with this pencil, rather than modifying the curve itself, I can now try to draw the curve that I want. So you probably wouldn't do this over the entire image, but maybe instead you would do it over a small portion of it to give it a slight bump, maybe, for example. And normally, though, what you would use is this tool, this wavy tool, which lets you modify the line directly. So you can, so that was many points, but you can basically modify the line as it exists in whole rather than drawing the line itself. And you can see here what used to be a value of 109 in the end will now be a value of 152, to put a numerical spin on what we were just talking about. Okay, so let's take a 5-minute break, and when we come back, we'll talk about masking. All right, welcome back, everybody. So in the first hour, we talked about levels and curves, which are all very useful to know and good to know, but perhaps not the most interesting things to work with. And so now we are in Photoshop, and we should really use Photoshop for what it is, maybe not just $10 or $20 worth of the $600 that makes up Photoshop. Did I make that joke before? I think I did. Oh. Okay, so now what I want to do is show you masking. So let's say I have an image like this one here. So this is an okay image, but there's a few things wrong with it. First of all, I use the combination of flash and a shutter speed to get the sunset, but because I was using a very wide-angle lens and using a flash that was close to the lens itself, I get this very annoying semicircle shadow on the lens. So obviously I have to crop this image. That's not too hard. We can do that pretty easily. Another few things that are wrong with this image is that the sky is just really incredibly dull and boring. Luckily we can do quite a bit for that by perhaps increasing the saturation and whatever vibrance is in Photoshop. And so just by doing that alone, I can get quite a bit more out of this image. But you notice that we have a couple of problems. First of all, the histogram here shows us that we have quite a bit of overexposure in the red channels. That means that we are overexposing something over here and some, and quite a bit in the yellow channel as well, which is a combination of other color channels. And that most likely is a result of this, the sun here. You can see that it's very, very bright and overexposed, and we have lost, so I'm so sure you won't be able to see details in the sun, but we get this strange halo effect because of perhaps some posterization that occurs at this very brightest end. And so maybe there's something that I can do to make this image a little bit brighter. And frankly, I don't know yet what that is going to be. This is pretty much just a very live demo, and we're just going to try a couple of techniques to see what perhaps I want to do to adjust this image. So I just increased the saturation a little bit. The contrast I won't increase too much, but I will open the image now as an 8-bit image just for now, and we will work with this image as we have it. So, all right, the first thing we need to do is to crop it, and that's pretty easy to do. Up here in the left along the toolbar, we have a crop tool where I can click crop, and I'll just select a portion of the image that I want cropped out. That might not be enough, or it might be. Let's stretch that out. All right, and then I hit, so now I've selected what I want to crop, and now this is pretty easy. I just hit enter. Now I've cropped out most of the shadow. There's still a little bit there, but we'll ignore that for now. We'll call this a perfect cropping job for now. So now there's some other things that I may want to do to this image. So let's zoom in a little bit and see what we want to focus on. So this, what we see in the sky is pretty interesting, but we may want to be very, very careful about how we increase the saturation and the contrast in the colors in this sky. And so if we were going to do something like this, in the optical world, when we were actually taking the photo, one of the things we might try is to somehow make the sun a little bit darker compared to perhaps some of the rest of the scene. So that way the rest of the scene could be a little bit brighter, a little bit more vibrant, and the sun isn't quite so overpowering in it. And so we could do something using what's called a graduated neutral density filter, which, if you remember, is a neutral density filter, it's like sunglasses for your camera. But graduated means it's like those really cool, hip sunglasses where it's like darker on the top part and then it fades to be lighter on the bottom. So we'll try to do this cool and hip thing in Photoshop using software. And so you'll notice that we talked, or you'll remember that we talked about layers in the first software lecture, and we have this whole layers palette down here. But one of the things that we can work with that we didn't really show is what's called a new adjustment layer. And so by clicking on this little half moon looking icon in the, I apologize, it's pretty far down, but it's, let's see, I can't zoom in on it because I'm on a different computer now, but it basically is just a half circle, or it's a circle with half of it being black and the other being a white, so just this half circle idea. And so within that menu, we see a variety of options that we have. We can adjust levels, curves, like we've talked about. We can adjust perhaps the hue and saturation, which we discussed briefly the first software lecture, where you can literally just adjust the saturation and some of the color preferences that we have. There's a whole bunch of stuff in here, but maybe right now what we will do is adjust the curves. And so now what you'll notice is that I brought up this curves menu that before I just brought from the menus up above, but now I have actually a new layer on this image. And you'll notice that you can see this icon a little bit better. You can see there's a chain icon right next to it, and then there is this white box. And this white box is what is called a mask. And this mask tells you how this adjustment is going to apply to the image. So right now it's all white. That means this image is going to be modified everywhere. And I'll explain that more in just a little bit. But let's say I want to perhaps make it a little bit more contrasty. So I perhaps want to make that part a little bit brighter, make this part a little bit darker, and what you can see as a result is now the image looks just a bit more contrasty. So I'll turn off this preview. You can see now the difference. The problem is if I go a little too far with it, I get too much contrast and I really lose, well, maybe I'm thinking that I'm encroaching the sun's rays a little bit too much into this lower portion of the sky. So I'll hit enter. You can see that the contrast is definitely increased throughout the image, but I don't want to apply this everywhere. Maybe I don't want to apply it in the sand or in the sun area. So I will take a look and I will modify this mask. So notice that I have many tools over here, and right now I'm going to select what's called a brush tool. And this brush tool is just like it sounds like. It lets me paintbrush a color onto the image, or rather, more specifically, it lets me paintbrush a color onto a layer. So if I were to select the background layer, if I were to select the background layer and I were to start painting, I'm literally just going to paint right on my layer. This is not what I want. But while we're here, we can see that this paintbrush is pretty fine. I perhaps want a bigger brush just for now. Just bear with me for now and realize that I do want a bigger brush. So maybe I want bigger than that. Maybe 200 pixels. Sounds good. Okay, so now if I try that again, you can see that I've changed the quality of the paintbrush quite a bit. Okay, but I don't want this at all, so I'm going to get rid of that aspect and modify it. What I'm doing is I'm clicking on the adjustment layer, this white mask on the adjustment layer, and I'm going to start painting on that adjustment layer itself. You'll notice, remember that before I was working with the color black, and that is the color that I want to paint onto this adjustment layer. So let's see what happens if I make this entire thing black, or as best as I can. So I'll start over here, and I'll just start painting. Let's see. So can you see a change? And I guess you can see it even more down here if I work down here. What's happening is that I seem to be painting less contrast onto the image itself. And so as I'm doing this, I'm realizing, well, maybe I don't really want to mess with the sun so much. I just want to perhaps flatten the contrast, even though it was interesting, just to make the pedagogical case here, to flatten the contrast here. What I will do then is to remove that mask. And so you'll notice that down here I have a color selector. Right now the foreground color is black, which means that I am painting the color black right now. The background color is white, but there's a little arrow right here that lets me swap those. So I'll swap the black for the white, and now I have white as the foreground color. Now I can paint that to regain this contrast that I had up here in this sky region. Okay, so this may look fancy and cool, but what is actually happening? Well, you'll notice that I am painting onto a layer, but we don't see what I am painting itself. If I hold down the Alt key, on a Mac it's the Alt Option key, and I click on that layer, I see that layer as it is, just that layer by itself, essentially. And you can see where I have painted black and where I have kind of erased this black area. I didn't do a terrific job around the edges because it was difficult to see, but now that I am here, I can clean up this aspect of the mask. Okay, so what does this mask mean? Well, this is telling us that we are making some adjustment to the image. And that was that half moon thing, the curves. I made an adjustment to the image, but this adjustment has a mask applied to it, which means that we are selectively choosing where that adjustment should apply to the image. And whatever is white, that will apply that adjustment to the image, and where it is black, it will not apply to that image. And it's not strictly black and white. It can have every shade in between. So if we were to color this a middle gray, for example, this would mean that we get sort of a half application of that adjustment onto the background. So what this means is that by using this brush, which as you can see is kind of fuzzy, and I got a fuzzy brush by having a rather large diameter at about 200 pixels with no hardness. The hardness basically just means how harsh it is. So now, just to show you as an example, I've increased the hardness to 100%. Now just, I don't have the, I didn't have black colored or black selected. So now you can see what happens when I have the hardness at 100%. It's very, very harsh, and you would notice this a lot more. When we're working with photographs, we want to have soft and gradual changes into this adjustment so that it looks much more natural. So get rid of all this junk, because this is not going to help you at all. I should probably choose a different tool. Delete, and oh, I missed. Okay, now go back up to the brush, and let's see, I will select, again, a hardness of 0%, and that tends to work pretty well in this case. Okay, so now remember that I was able to view this mask by holding down the Alt key and selecting it, but now I want to see everything again, so I just click on one of the layers, or I click off of it. Now remember that you have to be very, very careful to select the layer that you want to modify. If I clicked on this background image and just started painting, I'm just going to get black all over the image. So be sure that you are modifying the mask itself, and you can be sure of that just by giving it a sanity click. And don't be too crazy about clicking on it too many times. You just really have to click it once, and then you're okay. But now you can see where that black portion has applied to this image. And perhaps to make this a little bit easier to see, I'll make the curves even crazier. So now I've made it even crazier, which frankly makes the sky look pretty cool. But now, I should have done that a long time ago. So now, now you can see much more where this adjustment, the difference in this adjustment is taking place. And so just to make it a little bit more natural, I'm just going to get rid of a lot of this contrast in this area here and just try to smooth it out a little bit. And if possible, maybe I'll use an even bigger brush so that the edges then will be even softer. We'll go crazy. No, that's too crazy. I'll make it about... How about, oh, that's a terrible number. But I'll leave it at that, just because that's what it landed on. And now I can try to smoothen out this appearance on, all right, I'll just go for broke here. And so now what I've done is I've modified this. So now I get this very cool, contrasty sky, which was not part of the initial plan, and a much less contrasty, but where you can still see the details in it, side of this sand dunes. And so, if we were to take a look again at this mask, you can see I have some holes, so maybe I should try to clean it up a little bit, which works pretty well. This is why it's useful to be able to view the mask. You can see where you have perhaps some holes in your masking, and you want to be sure to cover it up completely. Even along this far right side, you can see I missed a little bit. Now I can go back here. So realize that you're not even limited to just using one adjustment layer to modify your image. You can make several changes to your image. So you can add a new one. Oh, let's see. What do I want to do here? So I will get rid of that one. Ooh, that's boring. Now I will perhaps adjust the brightness and contrast. So now I'll say, well, it's a little bit too bright. I'll try decreasing the brightness. So again, here, this is not necessarily to be the prettiest thing, but this is just meant to show you an example of what we can do. So what I did before was I used the curves and I adjusted the curves to be what I wanted, and I selected where in the image I wanted those curves to apply. So now I've done a similar thing, but for brightness. But now what I want to do is simulate a graduated neutral density filter. So what that means is that I use an altogether different tool. You'll notice that I have here a gradient tool, and just by selecting it, by default, it has very nicely selected for me a black to white gradient. So that means that by clicking and dragging my mouse, it's hard to see, but it's near the top center of the image, by clicking and dragging the mouse down, I will get a gradient from black to white. Now remember that I made this gradient on the mask itself. So this means that the very top, now this should probably be inverted because I wanted it to be the other way around. So Control I will do an inversion for me. So remember that the very top is white, which means that that portion of the image will have this adjustment contribute completely to it, and then we slowly fade the adjustment away. So if I were to click off of this, now we can try to see the change, where you can see the bottom of the image is not affected at all, whereas the top is. And so this might be a little bit more useful with an image that has perhaps an overexposed skyline or an overexposed section that you want to selectively make darker, but not the rest of the image. And let's see. I'm not sure if I have any of those. I will give another example instead. Okay. So instead of this, let's look at a different example for masking. And I have this image somewhere. Nope, it's this one. And this one. Okay, so this is a photo taken from my car, and it's okay, interesting, but what was surrounding were a bunch of trees. It was essentially a forest, and I want those trees to really pop. I want to make this portion of the image become very, very green. But I don't want to make the rest of the image very, very green. So just for now, I will accept all of the defaults in processing this raw file, even though I probably could bring up the green channel a little bit just to give it, or increase the saturation even, just to give it a little bit more pop. But now this is just an exercise in masking. So let's see. So maybe first what I want to do, oops, that's not what I want to do. Maybe first what I will, oh gosh. It heard me say that's not what I wanted to do, so it said, okay, I will help you. But instead, right now I'll try adjusting the curves a little bit just to see if I can get something more interesting out of this. All right, so it's higher in contrast. Maybe that looks pretty good. But now I will add an adjustment layer, and I will increase the saturation. I will use this layer to increase the saturation. So maybe I'll increase it a lot. Looks like the greens need more saturation, or rather lightness, hue. We're getting nowhere with this thing, with my curves. Okay. So let's selectively increase the saturation here. All right, just for the sake of argument, let's do something like this. Now, I'm actually going in a separate direction, and I'm thinking, okay, well, now the rest of the car looks better, but what doesn't look better is this, all of these colors in the middle. And if I zoom in, you can see I'm getting quite a bit of posterization, for example, here. You can start to see, it may be more difficult, but there's a very harsh change between this darker color and this slightly more blue color. And so I'm obviously getting some posterization from this change. So what I might want to do then is only selectively change the contrast within the car itself. So for this, I sure could use the brush tool again and try to brush out the areas that I don't want to be saturated. The problem with this is that it's sort of an unwieldy tool to use all of the time. So rather than do that, I want to show you that there's another method that we can use. So if you use some of these lassos that Photoshop has, for example, this magnetic lasso tool, you will be able to select portions of the image quickly and easily and then make adjustments to it. So here with this magnetic lasso tool, what this lets me do is I basically can, I'll zoom in a little bit more so that it becomes easier for me. I can basically click on a portion of the image. Let's see, so I click there, and then now as I drag the mouse across, you see that it's following areas of high contrast. So it can tell that there is this large gap in contrast between the sky and the sunroof here. Let's see, so by the way, if you hold down the space bar, whatever your mouse is doing will turn into this little hand icon. And then, so right now I'm holding down the space bar and moving the mouse, and it lets me move the image as a whole without having to readjust anything else. Okay, so now I let go of the space bar, just keep going, keep going, keep going. Now this is going to be a very quick way of selecting this portion of the image, this portion of the image accurately. And so obviously there's some bugs in my method. Like, you have to actually hold down the space bar. But, okay. Now this is very, very useful for when you have these sort of harsh changes in contrast. So right here I have a very well-defined edge that Photoshop can, when I'm using the magnetic lasso tool, it can follow that edge. So now I have selected here, remember, the mask, and because I have this selection, I can hit the delete key, and it will change the mask in that selection. So, and now it's done it in a very harsh way, which is what we wanted. You can see the outline of, so this is, the black was when I was using the paintbrush before, but now you can see that by using the selection tool, I'm actually able to get a very nice, even selection where I wanted it to be. So to give you a better idea of what this looks like, or how this can be used in a realistic setting, I was tasked to take some photos of basically some Lego sets that were used in combination to make strands of DNA. And one of the things that they liked was having this reflection down there. But the problem was that because I just had it on a mirror itself, it was too mirror-like. It became very busy, and I needed to selectively bring down the contrast and the saturation on the reflection. And so I had here two adjustment layers, first is of which is just the levels, and you can see I've modified the output levels to decrease the contrast in this section by a great deal. So you'll notice that rather than this being very contrasty, it's now much less so. And I had another adjustment layer where I brought down the saturation. And so in this way, you can selectively, you can just select certain aspects of the image that you want to be a decrease in saturation or a decrease in contrast. So basically here, this was before. So this was something that I did even slightly differently. I basically just used the select tool up here, and you can select a color range. So what I'm referring to is that you can notice that there's some portions that are not completely white here, that are not completely selected. And just as a shortcut, what you can do is use the select and color range, and you can just give it a color that you want it to select, and then give it a certain fuzziness, which means how much adjacency to that color you want Photoshop to select. So you can select more or less, and then when you do that, it selects that portion of the image. And you can see that there's the little marching ants signifying a selection, and it's a pretty complex selection. But by doing this, I was able to quickly just find this portion of the image that I wanted to selectively alter. However, there are cases where you want to modify, or you want to use something like this magnetic lasso tool. So this is another example where there is an adjustment layer here. And again, this adjustment layer is basically just decreasing the contrast. And you can see the output levels shows that I'm decreasing the contrast on this layer. And by looking at the mask, we can see that I have selected only the portions that I did not want, or that I have colored white, the portions that I wanted to apply to this, and let the rest be completely, completely black. So I suppose I should actually mention that when you are working with an adjustment layer, let's say you want to completely change the color. So I've talked about using the brush tool that will let you basically paintbrush on selection of black, or you can use these marquee tools or various other tools. But if I want to completely change this white mask to a black one, you should use the paint or the paint bucket tool, which you have to click and hold on the gradient tool, and it's selected under there. And so now my icon, my mouse is a little paint bucket. I can click on the image, and now I've changed the entirety of this color. So that's one thing that you, that's another thing that you can do as well. Okay, so masking is very, very useful. You can use it not only for these adjustments, but you can also use it to be able to splice two images together. So let's see. Let's say I want to do something completely crazy. I want to get out of these photos here. All right, so let's go back to this photo. So let's say that I was in a much more interesting place. I will open up that original photo that I had that we were working with initially. Well, let's see, which one do I want? This one here. And let's say that I want to actually change the background on this image. And this is one of the things that you can do with masking. You actually don't have to, you can apply masks not only to adjustment layers, but you can also apply it to entire layers. So let's take this entire layer. I'll copy it. I select it all by doing a Control A. It's also in Select All. And then I did an edit and a copy. Now I'm going over here and I'm going to paste it in. And you notice that it gives me a new separate layer. You'll also notice that the image looks a little bit shorter. And that's because, if you remember, I had to crop this image initially in order to get it to look right. But we're going to just deal with this for now. Let's get rid of this hue saturation. So now I have two images that are here. And maybe what I want to do is move this so that it's slightly farther up. So now what I've done is I've selected the Move tool, and I'm just going to move it up. And that looks pretty good to me. Okay, so now what I want to do is to be able to add a layer to it, and, or rather, what I want to do is be able to add a mask to this layer so that I can select where in the image I want this to show and where in the image I want this bottommost layer to show. And so the way that I do that, let's see, I want to create a I'm not used to this version of Photoshop. I want to create a new... This is embarrassing. One second. Let's see. Oh, it's right here. So I want to create a new layer mask, and I have two options, either the reveal all or the hide all. And so if I do a reveal all, that means that I'm going to reveal everything from this layer. If I do a hide all, then I'm going to hide everything from that layer. It really doesn't matter which one you select, because you can then select the opposite one. For now, I will do, let's do a hide all so that I can see the layer underneath it that I want to be able to modify. So remember that what I want the end result to be is that I want to basically change the contents of the windows here to be this more fascinating or more interesting background. And the way I did that is I added this layer and I added a new layer mask to it, and I basically said that I want it to hide all of this layer. So you notice that this adjustment layer, or this mask rather, is completely black, meaning that nothing is visible. Okay, so now what I want to do is select what I want, where I want that portion to show through. So we're basically going to do the same thing that we did before, where I select this magnetic lasso tool. I start up here. Oh, maybe I should start from the very beginning. How about that? All right, so we'll start over here. We'll just try to quickly do this. This is going to be a exact or perfect, but it's just to give you an idea of the capabilities here. All right, so using the magic wand tool, I am selecting. Oof. All right, I will fix that in a little bit. All right, so now I have this selection here. Remember that I should select my layer mask and delete that portion. So now I have a portion of the image underneath showing. And so I can fix this a little bit by going to select and deselect. I don't want this selection anymore. And then I can perhaps use the brush tool, and with a more fortunate brush size, and I can adjust the look here. So you can see that it's doing the wrong thing, which means that I need to invert the color to be white and basically just polish this up a little bit. So you can see that I probably should use a better hardness, or I should make this brush harder so that I don't get quite so much of a gradient within it. And I can just finish up the selection here. So,
what button did you hit to cut out the outline that you
had? What button did I hit to cut out that outline? I had the layer mask selected, and then I just hit the backspace. It's just as if it were deleting that portion in the mask. And as you can see, that's what happened. So now I have in my mask the white portion where the top of the moonroof is. I basically just did that by having that selection, hitting delete, and it deleted out that portion. So I have more that I can do. So let's try to do this one perhaps a little bit more quickly. Let's see if we'll just...
If you select the feathery before you do the selection, then you would have a less harsh...
Yes, right. So... Yes, that's a good point, and I will come to that in just 1 second. I just want to do this very quickly. So there is the option up here. So along the top, you usually have options for the tools that you are using, and there is this option called a feather, which basically means right now it's at 0 pixels, which means that when I hit delete, the change is going to be very abrupt. But if I want to increase the feathering, so maybe to about 3 pixels or perhaps a maybe more accurate 6 pixels, depending on the image and really how much feathering you want. Now what is going to happen when I hit delete, you're not going to be able to notice it very well from how zoomed out we are. But what it is doing is it is softening the edges of the selection.
Are you allowed to feather have to select the feathering before
Let's see. I think I can do it. You might be right. You might have to select the feather before you do the selection. We can zoom in and take a look. Oops. Yeah, so you can see that right now it's still a very harsh selection. So you have to select the feather before you actually do the selection in order to do the feather. What happened this time was that I typed in the feather after I did the selection. In this case, I argue that's okay because this is, well, it could use a little bit of feathering, but it's actually the edges aren't so harsh that it's not crazy. Usually on photos, like we mentioned before, you usually want relatively soft edges. And so using the feather, especially on photos, is a good idea. But all that is happening, and this is really just a quick and dirty mask tutorial to show you what sort of powers you can have through masking, is that you can now selectively change portions of the background. You can see there's bits where I had messed up a little bit. Oops, got to remember to select the correct layer. Oops, and you got to remember to have the correct color set. Now I can just make sure to finish up the little mistakes that I made with my very quick job using the marquee tool. I even preserve my fast pass over here, so in case I happen to encounter a toll road in the desert. So, oops, wait, too many oopses. So here I'll just very quickly finish it up, make this look interesting. It's sort of a shame that the sun is hidden behind the A pillar, the pillar in the front, but I can move this image if I need to. So the great thing about having a mask, and again, this is very dirty, you would zoom in a bit and you would make sure to use smaller brushes so that you can make more refined selections and make more refined masking. But the great thing about having the mask is that I have not actually altered either layer. Both layers still exist in their entirety. So I could perhaps try to move just this layer. Maybe if I, so by removing the chain, I can try to move the layer without moving the mask. You notice that I'm moving the layer behind the mask now. Maybe if this image was a little bit bigger, I could try blowing it up or doing something like that. Let's see, make it a little bit bigger. Now I can move it pretty freely within this mask. And I've made my drive a lot more interesting in this case. A little dirty, but a lot more interesting. I'm sorry? My flight, yeah. So it looks like I'm flying over the desert here. Okay. Are there any questions on masking graduated neutral density filters as we have done them in software? So you can do a lot with this, and certainly we had a lot of questions about how we can compress the dynamic range. How, in other words, if we have a dynamic range that's too large for the camera, where we have maybe a very bright sky and the ground is not so bright, so you need to take multiple exposures to properly expose. One exposure has proper exposure for the ground, the other one has proper exposure for the sky. You could then go back and using masking, you could combine the two photos so that you have a combination of properly exposed ground and a properly exposed sky. So that's one way, when we were talking about before, you can use software to recombine these images. Using masking is one of the ways that you would do this. And in fact, I would argue it's one of the best ways to do it. Let's see. So unless there's anything else, thank you all for coming. Have a great spring break, and we will see you in 2 weeks.